the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, Jason Bond, Stoneville, Mississippi, with the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. Of course, I have Dr. Bobby Golden with me this morning.
Yo, yo.
And today we have a special guest with us in our podcast studio, Dr. Frank Carey with Valent USA Corporation. So, Frank, good to see you, man.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I appreciate this opportunity. I've been listening to y'all's podcast over the last year and really excited to have an opportunity to sit in here with you guys today.
Well, we appreciate that. So, Frank, you wear a lot of hats, I know. So, you know, you do a lot of different things with a lot of different organizations. So, I guess to start with, just tell folks kind of who you are and where you're from and how you got to where you are today.
Well, that's a long, interesting story. I started out born and raised in Greenville, Mississippi. Went to school for my undergrad at Louisiana Tech after officially flunking out of Mississippi State University. And then
I don't know if I'd have told them that, Frank.
Well, it's part of my story. You asked for my
story. You got to be proud of where you come from. Don't be ashamed, Jason. Don't be ashamed.
It is what made me who I am. Did my graduate work in rice weed control at the University of Arkansas. And I've been with Valent USA for going on 25 years now.
So within Valent, I know you wear multiple hats within that company. I know you're our rep. But you also have some managerial duties?
I manage the research station here at Greenville and also manage the FMD rep that covers Arkansas and Boot Hill, Missouri, and West Tennessee. And then I cover Mississippi as a technical research territory myself.
That's a big job.
It can be at times. It's a lot of fun, though. A lot of different things. It's never the same thing any such day.
And outside of that job, which if it wasn't big enough, you also sit on multiple industry boards as well as the Rice Foundation?
Yep. I'm very fortunate that Valent allows me to work in areas that I enjoy, particularly rice. And I've sat on the USA Rice Foundation Board of Directors for about 6 years. And this last year was elected as chairman of the Board of Directors. So I'll be filling that role for the next two.
So what all is involved in being the chairman of the board of directors for the Rice Foundation?
I'm still trying to figure that out. There's multiple meetings that we do. The Rice Foundation, in my opinion, you may have heard Steve Linscomb talk about the foundation when he was a guest on the podcast last year, but it's one of the best-kept secrets of the industry as far as rice research. We are set up through USA Rice that we provide funding for research projects that have multiple impacts on the rice industry, not just Mississippi rice, but the rice industry as a whole. We also fund a lot of combined projects between states, multi-state cooperative projects, and not just with a single discipline. So it can be we've funded work with Ducks Unlimited before, looking at the sustainability of rice. We've worked with food science people looking at the health and safety of rice as it relates to pregnant females and babies, et cetera. We did a lot of work with the arsenic issues that were there a couple of years ago. We funded a lot of that work as well. So a good opportunity for people to have research ideas as it impacts the rice industry as a whole to come through the foundation to get funding for that research.
So researchers out there, if you wasn't aware, there is money available, especially for multi-state project from the Rice Foundation. And rice producers out there, if you wasn't aware of the ongoings of USA Rice and the Rice Foundation, get a hold of Frank and he'll tell you where your dollars are being spent.
Yeah, I mean, you think about the Rice Federation, you know, USA Rice, and you think about the promotion part of the industry and the work that's done in Washington D.C., but you don't ever think about it there being an arm of it that trickles back down into serving the people that serve, so to speak, which is folks like Bobby and I.
Right, and speaking of you and Bobby, I mean, the other aspect that the foundation does is we sponsor the Rice Leadership Program, which you two gentlemen were elected to this year. So congratulations on being chosen into that program.
We appreciate that, Frank.
Thank you. Yeah. Great honor to have, and hopefully we will do it justice and serve Mississippi well.
Yeah, we had Dr. Linscomb on last summer, and he, gave us a an overview of how that program works. So I know for me, at least, I'm really looking forward to participating in that.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to participating. You know, we've participated as a host in Mississippi when those groups come through, but we've never got to sit on the other side of it, and that's going to be really neat.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun for you guys to see the industry as a whole. You go across the U.S., you get out to California, Washington, D.C., Chicago Board of Trade, John Deere. You know, there's the program is sponsored by John Deere, Rice Tech, and American Crops. So I think it's be a great opportunity for y'all. And anyone else that is interested in that, either from a grower or from the industry, you know, get in touch with myself or Steve Linscomb. And
so there's an age limit on that, right?
There is an age limit. You have to be younger than 45.
So if you're a grower out there younger than 45 and you're not yet plugged in to that side of the rice industry, talk to Frank, talk to Steve, because I think it's going to be a really great program for us to go through. We've been familiar with it. We hadn't been with it. But we'd like to get more people involved with that side out there, because we need new leaders in the rice arena.
For sure, especially in Mississippi. You know, we're a small state, you know, acres-wise, but I think we're also a very active state, you know, within the rice industry. You know, thinking about some of the leaders that we have in our state, I don't want to name any names because those guys don't like that.
They don't want recognition.
Yeah, they don't like that kind of attention. But, you know, we've got some really strong workers in the rice industry that come from our state here in Mississippi.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great opportunity. Mississippi represents itself well. And if you look at the industry side from the leadership, there's just a lot of people that are aging out. They're starting to retire, and there's a lot of opportunities there for younger people to come in and fill those roles. And we definitely need leaders.
Well, that's a lot about what you do on a daily basis. There's not 24 hours in your day, right? There's like 30?
At least. And 7 or 8 days a week, seems like. But it's a good time. You know, I'm really concerned looking around at the weather right now. It's been rain all winter. All the hunting seasons have been terrible. And attitudes are usually you can count on the wintertime hunting season for everybody's attitudes to get a little better. But this year it doesn't seem to be that way. But no. Looking as we roll into it, ryegrass has got me concerned. What are we going to do with the Palmer amaranth has me concerned. There's a lot of issues out there with herbicide resistance, with weed control in general, crop acreage mix. It's going to be a rough year.
Yeah, and we're sitting here in the middle of winter, and already the conversations that you have this time of year, you know, generally they've got some consistency from one year to the next, and they're different already, you know, because of the dynamic that guys are facing out there with what they endured getting that crop out of the ground in September and October and even November.
Well, you talk to a lot of guys and they say, I spent just as much money last year at this point in the year as I did this year, except last year I had my whole farm rowed up, fertilized, and ready to go. And now I spent that money that we usually spend on that just getting the crop out. So we're starting off behind the eight ball, and all those are going to affect your weed resistance. You know, how do we hip up? Do we get hipped up? How long does it rain? If I don't hip up and I pull furrows, am I breaking bands? So y'all two, being the trained weed scientist, how do you feel having a winter like we had this year in a poor harvest season could influence resistance management moving forward within the season?
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear Frank's perspective on it. I mean, obviously I have my own ideas, but, you know, Frank's the guest, so let's hear what he says, and we'll go from there.
And then you can disagree with me later
on. Well, no, absolutely not. I mean, we think a lot alike, having kind of a similar pedigree with that degree from the U of A. So tell us what you think, and we'll...
I think we're in for a world of hurt. I mean, we haven't had a lot of fall herbicides applied. Usually that helps us out for ryegrass and horseweed and things like that. We haven't had those opportunities. The fields are rutted up. We're going to have to go in there, and as soon as it dries up, we got to do some tillage and fill in some ruts from the harvest season. Once we do that, if we're lucky and it quits raining, we can get in there in January, February, and start doing some of that work. We're still a ways to plant. We're going to have to work, you know, hopefully opportunity to put some residuals down right after we do the tillage to keep it clean up until planting. But there's going to be a management headache in timing, you know, with how many people do you have working for you? How many acres can you cover in a day? Is it dry enough to get in and work? Can we get it all done? It's just going to be a mess to get in and a struggle, particularly if someone's going early, like corn or some early planted soybeans. It's going to be a challenge.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, first of all, it depends on where you're standing. You know, some guys that got early harvest, you know, they if they don't have all of their ground worked up, they've got a good percentage of it. And then there's likely some guys, particularly in the North Delta, that have next to none of it, if any of it, worked up. So, one, it's going to depend on where you're standing. And then your weed spectrum for sure, you know, in the time of year that we're in right now, what is your history of ryegrass? Because that's the one that makes our decisions for us this time of year. And with the clethodim resistance in several of the counties in the Delta over the last two or three years, you know, that definitely influences what we do. When did the ryegrass emerge? You know, did it emerge while you were waiting to get the crop out of the ground, or, you know, was it a later emerging population? That's going to influence a lot. You know, ryegrass that emerged in October, if you try to work it up in March, you know, you're going to have some challenges there. In addition to getting the ruts out, you really can't bury it. You just can't get it buried. It's got enough leaves. If it's got some leaves out and they get some sunshine, it's going to pop back out. So burying ryegrass that's at a, you know, that's heavily tillering, it's got a good root ball on it, is a real challenge. You know, I've shown a lot of pictures of that in talks over the years. It's just not a disking up ryegrass is not a good way to address controlling it. If it's smaller, then sure, yeah. If the ground is in the shape where you can work it, you know, disk it and get it hipped up, yeah, I think you can work it out of a field.
So that's assuming you're coming behind soybeans. So I'm sitting here looking out the window right now at one of my rice fields that still has the stubble knee high in it, and it's not going to dry up anytime soon. One, how do you approach that from a weed control standpoint? And two, is that stubble helping me or hurting me laying out there with these ryegrass and stuff like
well,
that?
Well, so one, you know, if you're thinking about ryegrass, hate to make blanket statements, but in general, ryegrass tends to not like the soil textures of the fields on which we grow rice in our state. You know, you can't put that across the board. We definitely have had ryegrass problems in rice fields in our state, without question. But, you know, it doesn't like buckshot as much as it likes, you know, lighter, sandier soil. The second part of that, Bobby, would be the mulch that rice straw that's still on the ground affords you. So, I mean, you think about just driving down the, you know, take 2018-19 out of the picture, you know, rewind to any winter time in the last 10, and you drive down the highway and you picture what a non-treated soybean field looks like in December, January, February, you know, prior to field work, compared with a non-treated rice field, and it's going to look very different. You know, there's just some dynamics going on there that influence weed emergence and growth.
So, Frank.
Yes.
If I'm in that situation and I've got all this rice stubble out there and I can't disc it in, do I throw a match on it and drop in there and plant soybeans flat, or do I break that ground? What would you do if you were farming that 4,000 acres that I didn't get the stubble fixed on?
I'd be looking both directions and striking a match once it dried up, more than likely, in order just for timing standpoint. If you went in there and tried to work it, and then you got to deal with that extreme amount of biomass trying to plant, it's going to tie up your pre-emerge herbicides. There's just a lot of problems that can happen there. But
all right, so normally when I strike that match, it's in the fall. Now I'm striking that match in the early winter or possibly the spring. How is that burning at that point in the year going to affect my weed control and the chemical applications I make?
Well, it depends on how well it burns. Can you burn that stuff in February or March? I mean, is it ever going to be dry enough
yeah.
to actually get a good burn on it?
I don't know.
I don't know either. My gut instinct would be it's not going to burn too good.
No.
So you take the two scenarios or the two possibilities there. If it burns good, and then you run a chain disc or scratcher or anything, this is assuming there's no ruts. Let's just take that dynamic out of it. Let's assuming that you can stale this field in.
But a lot of the rice did get cut.
That's right.
Before in no ruts, no anything, but we just didn't get to take care of the stubble.
Right.
Right.
So assume we have minimal ruts and it does burn. I would say, man, you probably just found a pot of gold, and you better roll hard and fast. If it doesn't burn, which is the more likely scenario, I think then you need to really consider your choice of residual herbicides, because that biomass that's left on that field will definitely influence the effectiveness of that treatment. And not even so much the chemistry of the herbicide molecule and the biomass, and tying up, the term you always hear, tying up the herbicide. That definitely happens. But it's as simple as just physical coverage. You didn't get the herbicide to the ground. So there are definitely, we have wording in our weed control guide about certain products that, don't put this product out on a heavy biomass situation. Frank, I think a product like Valor, not to toot Valence horn on our show, but I think a product like Valor, it does a pretty good job of washing off.
Yeah, it can get washed off. It's not nearly as tied up as some of the others.
I have that conversation with people every year. If you do have a high biomass situation, Valor is going to be a good choice.
So it'll lay out there. You get a rain, it washes off the stubble, hits the ground, and you're good again.
Yeah,
that's right. That's the soil fertility guy trying to explain
right.
weed
and
science.
The ones where you run into a problem are the group 15 herbicides.
So what's a group 15 herbicide?
Well, if you'd let me talk, I would. Let me finish my.
Well, you've been talking a lot. I wanted Frank to talk.
they're the dual. Dual Magnum, Zidua, Warrant, Outlook, those are probably the four, name-branded products that we use most, and then a lot of associated post-patent products.
And those are some that we really rely on for resistance management when it comes to Palmer.
For sure.
I mean, trying to get those, add that group 15 in there for resistance management on top of your PPOs or what other chemistry you're using.
So there's not a field out there that doesn't get a group 15 in the state of Mississippi, Frank?
Well, I think there's some out there that doesn't get a 15 or a lot of them get it, and growers may not know that they're getting it in the premixes and things like that. But it's something, if you've got a field that's not getting a group 15, you really should consider incorporating into your others so that you're using those multiple modes of action for your resistance management, because that's really, really key for the Palmer.
And the grass too. If you think about a soybean rice rotation, there are no group 15 herbicides currently labeled for use in rice. Using those in the soybean rotation and suppressing some of our grass populations, that's a good tool to use, thinking about weed control in rice.
All right, so we talked about coming out of rice and going into soybeans and the mess that could pose. Take it the other way, coming out of soybeans, which were harvested a little later, which were rutted up a little worse, and going into rice. How does that change how you approach that scenario from what y'all just talked about?
Well, I think your volunteer soybeans are all of a sudden going to be a large potential weed that we're going to have to deal with in the rice field, particularly in a lot of these fields. Not so much maybe in Mississippi. I think Mississippi, we harvested most of our beans, but just hearing about Arkansas and Louisiana, there's still a lot of soybeans out there that haven't been harvested that they walked away from because they just couldn't market them. You've got a lot of potential volunteer beans that you're going to have to deal with. You've got the bean stubble typically is, particularly with the rain that we've had, and most of that's floated off down the ditch. So, yeah, I think you're going to be able to get into those fields pretty easy.
But it's going to be the ruts that bother you there.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to have to fill in. I mean, if you're growing rice, you got to be able to manage your water. If you got ruts in the field, you can't get the water on or the water off in a timely fashion. So you've got to go in there and till, which could be a factor in trying to get in on some early planted rice. We may not be as early a crop on some of these fields. You may have to pick and choose where you're going to go early and where you're going to go later just based on being able to prep the field.
But what do you think, Bobby? I mean, this is your area, so a rutted soybean field going into rice. What's your management going to look like? And take out the, you know, extreme, you know, knee deep rut, you know, low end of the field type thing, but a rut that has to be
fixed,
addressed.
On the fields where there's ruts that have to be addressed, there's not a thing wrong with planting a little later than we normally do. You know, we tend to push the envelope in Mississippi and try to plant the third to fourth week of March. And that's fine for some fields. But if you look at all our planting date data, you've got to the last week of April before you really start losing some yield. So don't get in a rush and make a bigger mess trying to work something up a day or two early. Let it get right, work it up. We'll have time to plant. We won't lose yield. Until we start getting into May on the varieties, we're in good shape. And with the hybrids, which we're about a 60% hybrid state in Mississippi, you can push those a little on into May and do well. So we've got this attitude of early, 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 let's get it done. And I think this year we're going to have to have the attitude of let's take a step, let's wait, let's make sure we get everything right, because I think a lot of your yield potential is going to depend on how you start. And starting this year isn't putting a seed into a stale seed bed. Starting this year is going to be, how do I get the ruts out where I can move water across the field, regardless if it's soybeans or rice?
Putting a seed into a good seed bed.
That's correct.
What's that old adage, you know, most important day of that plant's life is the day you plant it, and putting the seed in the ground. So, I mean, this year you say patience is going to be a virtue. We're going to need it, so it's going to be a virtuous crop is what you're telling me.
I hope so. Time is money. And speed wins the last 4 or 5 years. We're going to have to take a step back this year and make some hard decisions about maybe I don't plant my whole crop in 1 week.
Do you anticipate, naturally we don't know what's going to happen in the next 3 or 4 months, but do you anticipate 2019 being a year where a guy that maybe he always prioritized getting his rice in first or a good percentage of his rice in before he started planting soybeans. Do you see this as a year where if he does have a fairly smooth soybean field that was rice last year, so, you know, minimal ruts there, but then he's got a rutted soybean field that's going into rice, it seems to me like this is going to be a year where we probably will have some early beans and later rice in that scenario.
Well, I think what we've seen in the past is everybody, we're going to plant our rice, then we're going to plant our beans, and we're going to get out. I think what you're going to see this year is we're going to see, I'm going to take half my equipment and plant rice where I can plant rice, and I'm going to take half my equipment and plant beans where I can plant beans, and I'm going to take the other equipment that don't exist right now.
The third half?
The third half that don't exist, because right. I'm going to rent it from the John Deere and Case place, and I'm going to go around and start fixing ruts, because if it's dry enough to plant on the buckshot ground, it's going to be dry enough to fix ruts. So we're going to have to be doing three things at one time. And I think that's going to be the best scenario to capitalize investment and maximize net return is let's not focus on planting all in one crop at one time. Let's get in what we plan to get in as early as we can get it for each successive crop, which means I know it's easy to go all rice or all soybeans and then swap all the equipment over and do the next thing. But I think if we got soybean fields rowed up, we need to plant soybeans. And if we got good rice fields, we need to get those in early too. What do you think, Frank?
Well, I agree with you. I think we're definitely going to be managing field to field and making some decisions as we need to do that, trying to be smart as we go forward.
Well, Frank, man, it's good to see you. We appreciate you taking time out of your day to have a conversation with us. We know you'll be around at most of the meetings throughout the winter here in our state, and so we appreciate all the support that you provide for folks in Mississippi. But we're going to jump off now, and like always, guys, if we can do anything for you, y'all just give us a call.
Appreciate you, Frank.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity, guys.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.